the more one studies histories and see the connections of things, the changes in medicine, the changes in education, the changes in what the atomic bomb did the year we were born, the changes of the Cold War, all of that, you know, they're, and so often we talk just about, I mean, at that time all I thought about was the United States and the little world I was in, and there were huge changes happening in other countries that we, of course, never even learned anything about.
Sure.
It's just that the media and the attention that the 60s had is that it looked like it was a big movement, even though there were movements, there are always movements going on. A parallel course with the traditional history is a whole history of people trying something else and trying to make something else.
Are there really movements going on all the time?
What's
sure.
What's going on right now?
What's
the movement?
There are countless movements.
Yes, but that would have the equivalent.
Huge. When you and I grew up, people never said the word environment or ecology, and now there are women who climb a tree and stay for over 2 years.
That's right. I've interviewed them.
Yeah, she's a good friend, and
you know Julia Butterfly.
Yeah, she were buddies, and so. The environment is a huge thing that is different now than when we grew up.
You're right.
And the fact, when you and I grew up, kids could play outside. That you'd say, see you, Ma, and whether you had breakfast or not, you ran out and maybe you made it back for dinner.
That's right.
Now parents don't even want you to go outside because they're frightened you'll be sodomized or shot or something. Certainly the personal computer is a huge difference and a great tool. The thing that happened in Seattle and Quebec, the people fighting the WTO, IMF, right. the computer as a tool for social change is fantastic.
When I was young, my family left our front door unlocked always. We never even thought about locking our door.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that racism and violence aren't still an issue. They're both still gigantic issues. The forms, they take different forms. You look at the populations of our prisons and the arrests, and you see big differences.
Over 2 million, I think, now in prison.
You know, the kinds of drugs young people are exposed to is colossally different than when we grew up. And all of them, in some way, affect what's going on. I'm one of these people. When I grew up, I was concerned about the nuclear war.
Yes.
And remember hiding under a desk. And now it's even bigger for me that I actually feel our impending extinction. That the misuses of our environment, the fact that so much of our population is powerless and lonely and depressed and anxious, and what the multinational corporations are doing on a global scale.
Actually, I agree with you. I too feel impending extinction.
And I don't like that. And it's certainly at the forefront of my tenacity with what I do. I don't have to work anymore. I could just get wealthy and play golf. But the fact is, how does anyone do it? How does anyone actually know that our planet is in, our human planet is in great trouble? And they watch fake survivor shows when they're in the real survivor show and don't even know it.
Now that's a good line. I'm going to steal that one. Hold on, Patch. We're at the bottom of the hour. They watch fake survivor shows when they're in the real one. That's worth some consideration, isn't it? I wonder who the last survivor in this larger case will be. That'd be worth thinking about. My guest is Patch Adams, the real Patch Adams. And you'd do well to sit by your radio, turn the volume up, quit considering meaningless things, and listen for a little while. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. To Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 7, 2001.
Like I think most other people, I saw the movie Patch Adams, Robin Williams. And when I saw that movie, I was profoundly affected. And I wondered what the real Patch Adams was like. Tonight, if you'll just sit tight, you'll learn. Once again, Patch Adams. Welcome back, Patch.
Hey.
Hey. All right.
You know what I'd like to do before we start?
Yeah.
I'd really like to give the listeners an idea of what our medical work is about.
Yeah.
Can I do that?
Of course.
You see, I set out in medical school 34 years ago to use medicine as a vehicle for social change. So what that meant is that 20 adults and our children moved into a large six-bedroom house, and we said we were a hospital open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for all manner of medical problems from birth to death. We ran this for 12 years, and that's when we saw those 15,000 people. Never in our 30-year history have we charged money for anything. In fact, it wasn't that we wanted to be free for poor people. We wanted to eliminate the idea of debt in the medical interaction. In that same vein, we've never had anything to do with third-party reimbursement, Medicaid, Medicare, mm-hmm. Blue Cross. We never heard anyone say anything good about them, so we didn't want to have anything to do with them. They also have a lot of control over the way care is delivered.
Mm-hmm.
We also have never carried malpractice insurance.
Mm-hmm.
When you carry malpractice insurance, you're telling your patients, I'm afraid of you and I don't trust you. So you live your professional career in fear and mistrust. We are the politics of vulnerability, so we did not have people sign waivers. We decided not to be frightened. We also have been the only hospital to fully integrate all the healing arts so that straight medicine as well as all of complementary medicine was always welcome. As a family doctor, my initial interviews with patients were 3 or 4 hours long. And in spending that kind of time with patients, we found that practically no one was healthy. If we defined health as a happy, vibrant, exuberant life, and so that it very quickly behooved us to really look at the whole person, to start looking at a person and saying, look, people want to learn how to make friends. They want to learn how to love life. They want to learn how to be full of wonder and curiosity and passion and hope. They want their sense of humor back. And that these were medical issues. And that's why from our very beginning we integrated medicine with performing arts and crafts and agriculture and nature, education, recreation, social service. That this was all part of the package of being a doctor and a hospital in a community. We did this for 12 years. No one gave us a single donation in that whole time. In fact, our staff had to work outside jobs to pay to practice medicine, which is what I've done for 30 years, is pay to practice medicine.
What was the traditional medical community's, and I mean local to you at that time, reaction to what you were doing? I mean,
no idea.
No idea? They never gave you feedback? You never heard whether they liked what you were doing?
Well, if they don't like you, they would sick the medical society on you. So we never had any problems, and we were very friendly and fun to be with. So we made friends with a lot of doctors. We were also doctors that would make home visits, which we were the only doctors in this area that made home visits. So we were appreciated, and it was the fact that we really wanted to build a hospital that made us stop seeing patients.
Where was this?
Well, it was scattered in Virginia and West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Then we stopped seeing them and have devoted the last 18 years to try to raise the money to build a model hospital to our fantasy design that would have all of those principles in it. and that we would operate this hospital on less than 5% of the national average, saving 95% of the cost by making it a service and not a business. And because we've designed such a fabulous design, doctors and nurses line up to work for $3,000 a year, which is why it's really important for us to get our hospital built.
How many doctors, when they get out of medical school, are, do you think, on a path to do something like you're doing?
Well, most of them can't be on a path to do what I'm doing. I would say many more want to now than when I graduated from medical school, partly because it's half women. The problem is medical education, one problem, is that medical education has become so expensive that the average person, when they graduate, owes $85,000. So how can they go out to serve humanity? They're not going to do what I did, which is just ignore the debt and go do it anyway. And so they're in a trap that makes them owe a huge amount of money. There are also practically no models in the United States where a person can step into a service-oriented model. They can say, look, I didn't enter medicine to get rich. I wanted to enter medicine to serve my community, but where's the hospital or the community that's got that kind of clinic where I can do that?
You wrote that about 25% of all costs are paper pushing.
Well, those figures are pretty common. Administrative.
In other words, 25 cents out of every dollar, a medical dollar, goes for paper pushing.
Well, I mean, the figures are there. People debate 5% or more one way or the other, but they're, how much wasted money goes to malpractice? It's waste. There's huge amounts of waste.
All right. Let's talk about malpractice for a second. Let's say we want to get rid of the concept of malpractice. How do you get rid of then, or how do you address incompetence?
Well, you think slapping a lawsuit on somebody is going to get them to stop being incompetent?
Well, probably not.
It's such an absurdist thing. Most lawsuits have nothing to do with competence. It has to do with greed.
I mean, how do you root out truly incompetent doctors? What method do you use?
What's an untruly competent doctor? I mean, incompetence. See, in a real hospital like ours, everyone's really close to everyone else.
But in your book,
no one's going to be surprised that somebody's suddenly incompetent.
All right, but in your book, you do address the fact that there are incompetent doctors, and you say they need to go. But you don't lay out any method you might have in mind if the whole malpractice thing were to end.
Well, the way you do it, actually, I do mention it, is that you become really close friends with your staff, and you work together. You really see how the person is. And you call them on their stuff.
Okay.
I mean, it's cybernetics working in a beautiful, in our particular case, since we're on top of each other in the same building and living there with our families, we really have a chance to see. And that we, you know, there's not a competition for who saved the person or who did the healing or who gets the wealth from doing the healing. You know, in competition, you want to inflate your own and deflate the other person's.
Yeah, you acknowledge that medicine, you stress, is an imperfect science, and that you people are going to, you know, when they come to you, some of them are going to die.
I've talked about it many times before, so I'll mention it again. My time at Citi, at Citibank, almost 10 years with billions of dollars moving across my desk, and I learned so much in banking. I learned so much from the other side of banking. So I know a good bank from a bad bank. I know a good deal from a bad deal. And so when this bank approached us and said, hey, we'd like to advertise on your show, I said, let's do something different. Let's give folks something to draw them in, right? To let them know that you are a different bank. And I'm seeing a lot of banks out there pandering to current trends at the cost of the customer. But there's one that's not afraid to make bold decisions that put customers first, even if it's going to make headlines. It's Axos Bank. You do a quick search and you'll see what I mean. This is a bank that's all about integrity, fairness, and freedom to do business without compromising our values. Take a look at their rewards checking account, where you can earn the highest interest rate, and it's a big one. Listeners can get $150 if you open it by July 31st. That's $150 to you. Go to axosbank.com/pain for full details. That's Axos Bank, axosbank.com/pain. And for that cash bonus, you only need a $1,500 direct deposit within the first 3 months of opening your rewards checking account. Axos Bank is federally insured, member FDIC, and they're for us, all of us. axosbank.com/pain. Go check them out.
We need the right to make mistakes. Medicine isn't about curing, it's about caring. You never, ever, ever can know before a treatment the consequences of that treatment. You never can. You can be the world's biggest expert on that specialty or disease, and still, when you take the treatment, you have to see what happens.
Mm-hmm. And every now and then, not the hoped for reaction occurs.
Well, huge numbers of time it doesn't. And that's a good plug for being healthy. If a system is imperfect, it's a good to need it the fewest numbers of times.
You know, I had thought of a question to ask you as I read your book, and that was, can you think of any, we certainly are going to outline a lot that's wrong with modern medicine. That's easy for you after having read your book, but can you think of anything that's right about what's being done now and the way the structure is set up? And
I can't think of a single positive thing about managed care.
Not one thing.
It's a negative force. It's not either neutral. There's nothing positive about managed care. First of all, the term care can never be managed. It's inconvenient. You know, people don't have a heart attack between 4 and 5 each afternoon.
All right.
And managed simply means managed for profit.
Right.
It's not managed for service. It's managed so that you can use, you can understaff it and still get by.
Okay, here's one for you. You've done a lot of traveling, I know. And in a lot of other countries, the care is far below the care available here. If you have the money,
If you have the statistics, that's actually, we're way down on a huge number of medical statistics.
Oh, I'm sure we are.
I mean, if you compared us to the third world, but you compare us to other countries in Europe and other wealthy nations, and we don't look very good at all.
Well, a lot of people do travel to the U.S. from foreign countries for some specialized care, yes?
Right, yes. Heart, liver, lung transplants.
Mm-hmm. But not much more?
Any time where they think that the most expensive, highest tech will give them a better shot than what they've got, and they're wealthy, they can come here.
Are they wrong in thinking that?
Wrong. I mean, I'm not the judge here. You know,
the system is
unhealthy.
Yes, but all I'm getting at here is
Who are unhealthy and are rich, they want even the middle class to say, "I want the best."
Okay.
Imagine how much that makes the multinational corporations think. God, they want the best. Boy, do we have them right where we want them. You know, sure, we'll give them the best.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and we do. We do. The only argument I was going to make for the sake of trying it out on you was that, yes, everything you say about it's true, but it does allow, boy, by God, we've got the most expensive, best machines available to mankind, right? It does buy that.
Well, maybe we have them at the cost of not having low-income housing.
Well, maybe
the implication that we have so often now with money and what it's been on is that we only have so much money. and that what it's that we are in a real dilemma if that's the case, because would you rather have, say, three children who need liver lung transplants or have low income housing for 15 families? It's a very easy decision for me if it's an either or.
Is it really easy for you?
Yes. We need low income housing.
Huh.
You know, first of all, liver lung transplants, those kinds of things, they're basically experimental.
Yes.
And if you go behind the scenes of it, there's a lot of stuff where you don't know if they're experimenting with the kid or not. What are they actually doing, and what is...
If a liver transplant would save your life, would you refuse it?
Well, I don't know the other circumstances, do I?
I mean, today.
I don't know. I'd need to know more information. I can see situations where I wouldn't.
That's
the rationing that goes on.
But that's true of everybody.
I mean, when Mickey Mantle got his transplant, you know, he already was really sick. It was...
Yeah.
He got the Fame transplant. He wouldn't, you know, another ball player from a Bush league wouldn't have gotten it.
That's probably right. In other words, they say they're not moved up on the list, but I find that's hard to believe, you know, really hard to believe. I mean,
killing people in the Far East for their organs. They're raising them as organs.
Well, it's true. In fact, they had a mass murder in China the other day to harvest organs.
And so,
a mass execution, I guess, would be a better way to put it.
It's another kind of harvesting.
That kind of stuff...
The thing is, though, see, if greed weren't there, even the transplants wouldn't cost that much. See, it's the greed that makes everything cost so much. Everyone wants their piece of the greed. If this really were a democracy, and if our tax dollars did not support multinational corporations and actually cared about people, then why doesn't this nation have a generic pharmaceutical company? First of all, if they just took the generics, if the government just took the generics, they could go down to, say, Angola prison, where there are 6,000 lifers, and create a beautiful place there to instead of making license plates, they could make generics and drop the bottom out of the pharmaceutical industry. They could then, why don't they in fact create 10, we could call them complexes, where they had biochemists and physiologists and geneticists, and they got together, and whatever they produce was for the people.
Well, let me play the devil's advocate with you for a second, all right? The argument would be, oh, but these wonderful drugs that we get, state-of-the-art drugs that are developed, come because the pharmaceutical companies have all this money to do all this R&D to find them. That would be the argument.
Well, if people actually went behind the scenes and looked at the politics and economics of pharmaceutical companies, they would hate what they see. We don't need these pharmaceutical companies. Again, if we decided to turn our society towards one of compassion and generosity instead of power over and money, which now rules the world, in that world, we would be bragging about how little we made. We would be saying how no one in this town has seen violence in 50 years.
And do you think we would still brag as a nation that we come up with the best new drugs for whatever?
No, first of all, nations have gone anyway. We're through with nations.
Think so?
Oh, yeah. Multinational corporations are the power now. It used to be nations, and they just used nations in whatever way they want to. That's what the WTO, IMF, these are about eliminating nations. Nations are at best a nuisance to the corporate world.
Do you think that's a direction that things eventually will go in anyway, that nation states will give way to something larger ultimately?
Well, I wouldn't be a political activist if I didn't think that, we can do something. We, all of the listeners here, I mean, from what you say, it's almost as many people as voted. And
no, so not that many, but millions.
We have the stupidest, most dangerous president in my 56 years in office.
Now? The one now?
Oh, no question about it.
Bush?
And
you weren't a big Bush guy, huh?
Oh, I'm really big on the concern for him. I mean, his level of ignorance is colossal. I mean, that alone should make him frightening.
In what areas have you found the most distress when you think about our president?
When I've spent my lifetime reading people's vibes, okay?
Yes.
And I am assured from watching him, the little I've seen on TV,
yes, that
this man is clearly without one iota of compassion. That he probably, I certainly couldn't spell the word, but as far as actually knowing what it means and having it, he doesn't have it. And
well,
that's dangerous.
He knows about oil.
Well, you don't need much compassion to know about oil, and he's already kissing oil butt. What an embarrassment. I mean, such a shameful embarrassment to intelligence, to what could be. That's what I'm saying. I'm not going to sit back and say, well, things have all, war's always been, so I'm supposed to just go along with war.
Folks, there's two things that stick out in today's environment with what's going on. One, with all the prices going up and everything else, somebody offers you a 70% discount on something, you should stop and listen. That's number one. And we're about to do that. And two, when someone can protect you, has a product that can protect you and protect your interests, protect your cell phones, your notepads, and your computers, and beyond, your laptops, well, then you have to stop and take a listen. And, I was traveling this weekend. I've been traveling a lot, talking to people, and I stay in hotels. And one of the most fantastic things is having this product, and they've been a sponsor for a while, and they've been fantastic, IP Vanish, and it really protects everything. I don't have to worry about who's snooping, what's going on. And some of the stuff we deal with here, with sources and other things and some sensitive stuff, it's nice to have an extra layer of protection. Every commodity you can imagine is going up, and they step in and say, well, we'll give you folks out there who listen to the podcast 70% off. It's like, what? We've received a lot of feedback about folks who are using it to their advantage and keep yourself protected. And that's important these days more than ever. And you throw in the discount and then you got a winning combination. Tired of feeling like someone's always watching you on the internet? Maybe advertisers know a bit too much about you, or you're concerned about the privacy of your identity. Using incognito mode won't solve the problem either. IP Vanish VPN is here to protect your right to privacy and help you stay anonymous online. IP Vanish helps you safely browse the internet without exposing your private details to third parties such as hackers, your ISP, or advertisers. You can use IP Vanish on your computers, tablets, phones, even devices like your Fire Stick, and when you're streaming media. When you use IP Vanish, all of your data is encrypted. This means that your private details, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be completely shielded from falling into the wrong hands. Even your physical location will be hidden. IP Vanish makes you virtually invisible online. It's that simple. And you can use IP Vanish or unlimited uses on unlimited devices without sacrificing on speed. Your computers, tablets, phones, even devices like your Fire Stick. IP Vanish is offering an incredible 70% off their yearly plan for our listeners with a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's like getting 9 months for free for you folks who need a little help with the math. IP Vanish is super easy to use. All you have to do is tap one button and you're instantly protected. You won't even know what's on. Stop sharing with the world everything you watch, everything you search for, and everything you buy. Take your privacy back today. So go to IPVanish.com/pain. That's P-A-I-N-E. And use promotional code PAIN, all in caps, P-A-I-N-E, and claim your 70% savings. That's IPVanish.com/pain.
Well, capitalism won the Cold War, so I'm supposed to just go along with that.
Uh-huh.
I don't go along with things that don't feel right to me. I don't go along with the fact that people are denied care. I don't go along with the fact that 60% of our school teachers have to have second jobs and professional sports figures are multimillionaires playing with their balls. I don't have to go along with that. I can condemn it.
You can, and you are.
I just did.
But you can't keep doing it because we've got a break. You can do it some more when we get back. Good morning. Well, I told you. The Wild One, Patch Adams, is my guest. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM in the nighttime.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from May 7th, 2001.
My guest is the real Patch Adams. The real Patch Adams. You may have seen the movie with Robin Williams. And I guess to some degree that was representative. And we're finding out how representative, because we're talking to the real guy right now. We'll keep that up in a moment. Again, here is Patch Adams. Patch, welcome back.
Hey.
All right. So there's nothing really right about anything we're doing right now medically.
Well, you actually asked about the delivery of care.
Yeah, delivery of care, sure.
Okay. Well, and yes, there's nothing good about managed care. It's a nightmare. It is a vulgar invasion of greed into what can be a beautiful profession.
What made you get into this profession anyway? In other words, you were suffering yourself. I mean, how did you transition?
I was a science nerd. I always was going to be a doctor.
You were always going to be a doctor, even before you got ill. You wanted to be
right.
A doctor. Okay. All right. So that's interesting. That never changed. You've got a lot of passion then.
I do.
You talk about passion in your book a lot.
Well, it's the label for living. Can I do this thing that I want to do for my friend?
Yes, you can always do something, whatever you want.
Great. I just want to let the listeners aware of my concern for forced psychiatry as a violation for human rights.
Forced psychiatry.
Right, where
involuntary commitments.
Involuntary psychiatric commitments, forced electric shock, forced medication. But I want to go on record for being very much against those things. And, I've had a lot of concern for the psychiatric profession anyway. I saw how I was treated, and I've looked in psychiatric texts all over the world, and I've never found one with a single sentence on mental health, and these are supposed to be the mental health experts.
How were you treated?
Well, I was medicated, first of all, and not talked with. It was pretty infantile, and I was not a forced psychiatrist. forced admission. I admitted myself. I was suicidal. But there are tremendous numbers of people who are. I worked 8 years at St. Elizabeth Hospital, which was the only federal mental hospital. And I definitely saw forced psychiatry there. And I want to read a statement of my friend Rodney Yoder, who's in Illinois, who his story, I've not met him in person, but we've exchanged many, many, many letters numbering in the hundreds of pages. I know certainly as he is very intelligently, desperately trying to find freedom from his forced incarceration by people who are abusing our profession to keep this man in prison. I'm going to read a statement. I talked with him last night, and I asked him to fax me a statement. I am Rodney Yoder. For 10 years, I have been confined to an insane asylum in Illinois as a retaliation for suing a lawsuit against a state official for making repeated complaints about my incarceration.